like to invite the following people to join me for lunch.
I think we should share an awesome blossom. What do you say? They are awesome.
Order!
Cheeseburger, please!
Get off, Napoleon. Make yourself a dang quesadilla.
And I'll have the number 8. That's a party platter. It serves 12 people. I know what I'm about, son.
This burrito is delicious, but it is filling.
Okay, I'll have the linguine, red sauce on the side. If the sauce does not come on the side, I will send it back.
Can I take your order?
It's time for the Lunch Rush, the latest and greatest in sports news. Here's Brady Hall.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the sports world right now, but some of these stories just kind of hit me. The Brooklyn Nets are shutting down guard Ben Simmons for the rest of the season. Ben Simmons, man, what a strange NBA journey it's been for him. He hasn't played since the Nets' final game before the All-Star break last month because of a nerve issue in his back. He's missed a total of 33 games this season with knee and back injuries. He sat out all of last season. Crazy decline since his All-Star days with the 76ers. Just a wild story there for Ben Simmons. But he's done. He's done for the season. Another strange one for him. Tanner's favorite, according to Tanner Schwinn of Good Morning NoCo, the best baseball player in the history of the world based on a couple of great seasons, Shohei Ohtani to make an MLB record, $65 million in 2023, according to Forbes. So, I mean, Forbes, the people that are giving out money certainly believe that he's a history maker. This is $65 million. For the 2023 season, including endorsements, his annual salary, things like that. But, wow. The amount includes the one-year $30 million contract that he signed, the extension that he signed back in October, but also a ton of great endorsement deals. And this is great. Great for him. The more endorsement deals he gets, that's great for the MLB. That's a guy you want to get behind. That's a guy you want to market. So, it's a lot of cheese, man. What's going on with the Packers and the Jets thing? The Packers are, like, confused by this. According to ESPN, they haven't really talked about Aaron Rodgers much. Or to him, anyway. The story starts off by Rob Dimovosky. If Aaron Rodgers wanted direct conversation with the Packers about their direction and his future, then one high-level team executive believes the quarterback should have responded to their attempts to reach him this offseason. General manager Brian Gutekunst said Monday at the NFL's annual league meetings that he tried unsuccessfully to reach Rodgers many times since their final meeting in January shortly after last season. But then Rodgers, 2 weeks ago on the Pat McAfee show, said that the Packers were not direct with him about their intentions and how he fit into their plans for the 2023 season. He said, Gutekunst said, I was really looking forward to the conversation with Aaron to see how he fit into that. Those never transpired. So there came a time where we had to make some decisions. So we went through his representatives to try to talk to him where we were going with our team. But at that point, they informed us that he would like to be traded to the Jets. Who's lying here? Rodgers is saying, yeah, they didn't really reach out and we didn't talk to each other. And then the Packers say, we tried to call. We tried to get in touch with his reps. Was Rodgers in another dark cave or something at that point, maybe? No cell service in there, so there's no history of a missed call.
Who is a worse negotiator, Rodgers or Ken Francis?
Well, Ken Francis hasn't struck a deal yet. So I would say Ken Francis. He's actually
he got a memo from the NFL.
He did get him. He can't strike a deal. He can't even talk to people, though. Rodgers has at least got money in the bank. We got to see what Francis is all about first.
It's probably not in a bank. It's probably in some lockbox and buried in the middle of some Green Bay park or something.
Buried somewhere in random spots that only he will know if he gets a little, you know, a little high.
Only he can find the spots.
And then he's like, take me where I need to go.
Oh, I know exactly where that is.
To dig up my money. And this is just more from yesterday, but since you weren't here, Angel, this Lamar Jackson thing, Baltimore's acting as if, no, we're still going to be good here.
Weird.
It's very weird, man.
Is he worth it? Is he worth all this drama?
No. He's not worth the drama. They offered him a ton of money last year. He didn't take it. And now it's, where do we go from here at this stage?
I'm seeing stuff about the Colts. Apparently, Ursay's plane was in Baltimore recently over the weekend. Hearing stuff that if they don't ultimately take a quarterback high, they may just try to make a trade on draft day.
Boy, wouldn't that be something? Can you imagine? Lamar Jackson just doesn't, I don't know, the Colts, that just doesn't look right to me. It just doesn't look right. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, tell me about the Miami situation with one of the receivers tweeting out that they want Lamar there.
Oh, it was one of our safeties. One of the new free agents they signed, Sean Elliott, who he played with Lamar in Baltimore for a couple of years. But he quote tweeted Lamar's letter that he put out yesterday. Simple hashtag, come to the Dolphins. In which Dolphins Twitter promptly responded with, who are you? What do you think you're doing? I cannot believe you just said this. You are off my team.
What are we doing here? Like, why would you do that? I don't care if that's what you thought. I don't care if that's deep down really what you want is to see Lamar Jackson play for the Dolphins. But you don't tweet that, man.
And I see stuff like, oh, maybe he doesn't know because these players, they only, you know, they'll listen to the national media, so they'll believe whatever the narrative is about Tua. I'm like, no, that's crap because these players do talk to each other. Why else would Deshaun Elliott be defending his former teammate, Lamar Jackson? They're bros. They're friends. These guys know each other.
I don't know, man.
They know the reputations that are out there. Why would you stir this up even more on a team you haven't even practiced with yet?
It's so bizarre to me. Just absolutely bizarre. I mean, Twitter can be a really cool, insightful tool for these players to use, but...
Well, then he tweeted like an hour afterwards, after he deleted his original tweet, say, guys, come on, don't take it seriously. It's just Twitter, laughing face, laughing face. No.
I mean, I get that we don't need it. We shouldn't take Twitter super serious, but if a guy...
But you should know that if you put it out on Twitter, people are going to run with it as if it's true.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's still truth to Twitter. It's a bizarre, different world. You're not going to say 89.9% of the things that you would say on Twitter to a person in real life. But saying that, hey, get Lamar over here. Well, that means that he would replace Tua. That's what that would mean.
Who has since got a fifth-year extension.
Right. Yeah, I just... The drama. I mean, Tua's, you got to admit this though, Angel. There's going to be pressure on Tua next year. There's got to be pressure.
I don't think more pressure to stay healthy rather than last year where it was, can he do it?
I mean, before he got the concussions, he looked pretty good. He looked pretty good.
He was in the MVP conversation for about 4 weeks in the middle of the season.
Yeah, I mean, the games I saw, he looked like he had the it factor. But it was so brief. And that's why the pressure will be on him is, can you stay healthy? And what you did before you got messed up, can you bring that all season? And that's going to be the question mark for him. It's not like it's not a question mark for Lamar Jackson. Listen, I'm a Lamar guy. When he's healthy and he's on the field, must-see television. But whoever gets him is going to have to give up two first-rounders and then sign him to that deal. That's going to make him the highest-paid quarterback in the league.
Fully guaranteed.
He wants all the guaranteed money, and that's hard to do when you got a guy, for any player. But when you got a player that's going to get hurt, it could get hurt. It's
and,
a big
you know,
deal.
You'll hear like, oh, Lamar needs to, you know, he doesn't need to ask for the guaranteed money. Well, he does because he's smart. He knows himself. He knows this type of play, that the style that he plays quarterback with. He knows if I get hurt and I'm out for some time, I need to make sure I have money to take care of myself. He knows that. But so do 32 other owners saying, I'm not willing to invest that much money in you if you're not even confident you can stay healthy.
Yeah. Does he make sense with the Patriots? Robert Kraft said that's up to Belichick. He said that's up to Belichick.
No.
I don't know.
Because look at the quarterbacks they've had under Belichick. They do not fit Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and you know, Cam wasn't really running that much, but still
Cam was
really
washed at that
didn't
point.
Really make much sense. You might see the Patriots just go a completely different route, though. I mean, that's what
apparently
you see
they
sometimes.
They like Bailey Zappi.
That's a weird situation, man. Lamar.
Are the Niners still into it?
Yeah, sounds like Brock Purdy's the guy.
They're saying Darnold might be starting.
Who said that?
Shanahan.
Really? I thought Brock Purdy was the leader in the clubhouse.
He's the leader, but they may not know about his health in terms of week one starting.
Oh, but if he's healthy, then he's their guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I buy that. They said Trey Lance was the guy, too, and where did he go?
How are they so good? They are bucking the norm. Because coaching. Well, coaching and defense and
culture,
yeah, it's a great culture what they've crafted there.
There's not a lot of egos on that team.
No, and you would think. I mean, they worked it out with Debo, and they made that work really well. You wondered if that might be the ego that went over the top, but
Kittle's good,
got that
locker
right.
Room guy,
great guy for them. Great
McCaffrey
leader,
just added a whole new weapon to them.
Mm-hmm. You got a lot of guys. Sure, McCaffrey's got injury questions, but as far as a teammate and a guy,
he's relatively healthy. Yeah. Relatively healthy. When
sure.
He got to San Francisco.
Yeah. Bizarre stuff going on. All right, it's Top Text Tuesday. Shoot us a text on our First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Mike Brohard coming up next. We'll talk about what he saw today from the first spring practice for Colorado State. Don't miss that. That's coming up next. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're live from the Aloe Fiber Studios on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Baseball season and the Colorado Rockies can be heard on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Clay Millen, quarterback for the Green and Gold, and you're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Yeah, we saw Clay Millen out there, along with all of the other Rams. Along with this gentleman joining us now on the First Advantage Hotline, Mike Brohard of CSURams.com. And Mike, what a coincidence. I wanted to break in and talk all things offensive line, and you just, lo and behold, you put a great story out about the offensive line for Colorado State available at CSURams.com. Look at you go, man.
I put that out a couple days ago for you, Brady, to kind of prime the pump.
Yeah, prime the pump. It's stuff that I'm interested in. I think Rams fans, that's the big question mark, is how does this offensive line look? So great stuff by you. So, again, we're not going to be able to answer that question today, but it was nice and cold out there. But the offensive line, that's kind of where I want to get into in just a moment. But, Mike, we finally got to it. We finally got to the first spring practice. After a couple of delays, the weather's nuts. We kind of expect that, but we got it done today.
We did. A week late, basically 6 days late, I believe, officially. But it'll be more condensed camp with four practices a week instead of, you know, three, you know, 5 weeks where you got three. You're going to have some weeks where you got four. And, you know, they got to kind of work through it. I mean, the team has some questions that they want to answer. And you really don't answer those in the spring, but at least you get closer to them. You get things set up for when the real work really has to start in the fall. Everybody is on campus. You'll see at every spring camp, there are some people that look really good, and you wonder if they're going to have a role. And then somebody comes in the fall, and, you know, that person's no longer in the picture. They've been passed by. But that's kind of the fun of spring, too.
What goes through your brain day one, Mike? Obviously, I know you're getting to know this team well before we see them get out onto the practice field. But, you know, you're seeing people on Twitter. How'd they look today? I mean, I don't know. Quarterbacks are throwing the ball in the air. Receivers are catching them. Guys are running. So what are you looking for in a day like today where we're just getting out there? What are some of the key things you're focusing on?
I guess the things I look at are what players look different, because, you know, they're coming off an 8-week intensive winter training program. So you want to look at guys who needed to change their bodies, and did they do it? And you see a lot of that out there. Sometimes you can't always tell that the strength gains are made. So, like, I spent a lot of time just bugging the crap out of Jordan Simmons and his staff about the guys that really made gains, because you can't always tell it. It depends on the body build and stuff, but there are some people out there that look a lot different, that are a lot stronger, and they're all over the place, too. It's not just the big guys. It's, you know, some smaller guys in terms of, you know, like linebackers, defensive backs, running backs, things like that. So those are things I kind of look at. And you kind of look and talk to coaches about guys that just seem to be getting it playing a little bit faster. They're making their reads better. Those are the things you want to see because, you know, like DeQuan Jackson, prime example. He's probably not the fastest linebacker you've ever seen in your life, but he made plays because he was just so dang smart. He could see things. He could read things. And that gave him an extra step that he could make up. He didn't have to be a 4-4 guy because his reactions were 4-2. You know, those are things that you kind of look for, guys that are kind of getting it where the light bulb is going off above their head, and you know they're seeing things the way they want to be seen.
Mike Brohar joining us from CSURams.com. Some of the new names, you know, I was asking you about while we were standing out there today in between shivers. Mike, I forgot my gloves. Next time, maybe bring an extra
pair.
That's
such a rookie move.
They're in my car, and I was like, I don't need gloves. Halfway out there, I was like, I've come too far. You know,
yeah.
I can't turn around now. But talk to us about, I've had people wondering about the tight end position. How much will the tight end be really utilized in this offense? And obviously we'll get into the offensive line. But and then a newcomer on the wide receiver, a local wide receiver out there too. So talk to us about some of those key ingredients that maybe we can expect something from.
Okay, so if you're looking at the true freshmen that came in that are early in camp, there's three of them, right? And so Silas Evans out of DPS. So it would be cool if Silas comes in and becomes a player over the next 4 years because I think it'd be good for Colorado State, obviously. It would really be good for the DPS. So he's somebody that you kind of keep a watch on. And the thing is like I went out, like they've had a couple walkthroughs. He's a kid that catches the ball with his hands. He high points it really well. He looks like he's got really good body control, but again, nobody's in pads. It's just like running backs can look phenomenal right now, but nobody's hitting them. So you don't worry about running backs until you actually start seeing them get hit. But Silas looks like he's got the physical tools and stuff. Drew Rodriguez is a linebacker. You don't always see those guys coming in early at that position, but he's here, and that looks, you know, that's great for them. So, and then you've got, you know, other transfers that have come in that are in early. I think there's 14 new guys in that way. That are either transfers or true freshmen. So you do. You keep an eye on them, and you want to see how fast they pick up on whether you want to call it the Ram way or pick up on the offense, pick up on the schemes, the way people are playing. Kenny McDowell is another one. He's a defensive lineman who comes out of Texas. He's got a great frame. They need to fill it out. But even if he's not ready to play physically this next year, if he gets the defensive down and what they want to do, then he's a step ahead once he gets the weight and stuff put on.
Mike, talk to us about Dahlin Holker, the tight end, the transfer from BYU. You guys were telling me about him while we were standing out there, so I started to watch him a little bit closer, but maybe he could be a playmaker for this team.
Yeah, and that's a position that if you go back and you watch when Nevada was really good, they employed their tight end a lot, and he was a big play guy. So that's something that was missing in the offense last year, whether it was play being young or the fact that it was really an inexperienced position for Colorado State. They brought in Holker from BYU, who actually played in this offensive system in high school. So I chatted with him a little bit, and he's like, yeah, the verbiage is a little bit different, but it all makes sense. So that's a good sign, and he's a kid that can make plays. And then you bring in a JUCO transfer, Vince Brown, who's nearly 6'7", that's a position where they really want to threaten and challenge in the middle of the field, which CSU wasn't able to do a lot last year. So if you get some production out of that position, in addition to the, you know, Jordan Williams, who really, you know, he made some strides last year at the end of the year, and that was tough for him as a true freshman coming in the fall, but he did. If you get some production out of that position, you've just opened up the field a little bit more and you stretched it in different ways.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I wondered if that was going to work out for them last year. Of course, so many things we thought might work out, we never really got to see fully play out because of, you know, a scattered offensive line. The offensive line play just wasn't great. And not to say other players on that team didn't make mistakes, but it starts with that O-line. Based on what you know right now, in conversations with these guys, seeing them work out, seeing them out there today. I mean, it's obvious you got a bunch of new guys in here. You got depth. So we got to assume that it's improved at this point. But how much can you tell us about that improvement right now about the O-line?
I can tell you nothing about the improvement on the O-line right now because they haven't blocked anybody. They're not in pads. So that stuff's got to develop. What they can do this spring, though, is they can put their five that they see together, which in some ways could be tough because I think once Brian Crespo comes back, they see him in their plans, and he's going to be out all spring still recovering from the injury he suffered in week one last year. So that's something. But still, you can get your top 5 to 8 guys that are healthy in camp, learning to play together, drawing a cohesion, learning the system together, and that will help when they start blocking. The thing I haven't talked to Drew Moss yet, but I'm very impressed with Oliver Jervis and Savion Henderson because, like, I approached them both. I mean, you're coming to a school that led the nation in sacks allowed. How is that a recruiting pitch for you? And you'd think a lot of guys might be scared away by that, but I was really impressed. They look at it as a challenge. That's their way to, they can come in and they can make an impact on a program, and that's kind of the attitude. That's definitely the attitude that you want with offensive linemen coming in. They want to be part of the solution, and they're going to work for it. And Jacob Gardner has really done a good job of bringing them into the system, and they're hanging out a lot, and they're talking a lot, and he's helping them learn everything that they need to. So that's a really good start. So I think last year, really in spring ball, you can tell a little bit. It was more so in fall camp. That first scrimmage we had last year in fall camp when Clay was getting hit a lot, or wasn't getting hit because he can't hit the quarterback, but people were getting to him, you started to wonder. And then, of course, it kind of appeared that way. You know, you give up 9 sacks to Michigan. Okay, it's Michigan. But then that still kind of keeps going. And then you have the constant rotation because of injury, 4 different centers that started. That's a lot for an offensive line to kind of have to overcome. And this way, at least with some new blood in here, it gives you the hope that they can get this fixed and turned around so that they average more than 13 points a game.
Yeah, that would be awesome, wouldn't it? I mean, get into those 20s. I mean, again, if you just score more than the other team, you know what's going to happen, right? Good things are going to happen 90% of the time.
Yeah, if you outscore the other team 100% of the time, you're going to win.
Oh, is it 100? Okay.
It's 100% of the time you're going to win. No, but I mean, that's the thing is, you say like 2 sacks a game. That's where you want to see it down. Let's be realistic. If this team throws it 35 to 50 times a game, you're probably looking more like 3 sacks. That's a lot of pass attempts. So, but you can survive with 3, 9, and 7 a game consistently. That's a lot of time behind the chains. And let's be fair. It's not all on the offensive line. You have tight ends involved in those protections, and we already mentioned they were pretty young at tight end last year. Yeah, running back. Running backs learning the new system. They're part of it. And the other thing is you had Clay, who is a redshirt freshman, who's been very open about the fact that he has to get rid of the ball better than he did last year and not take some of those sacks. Some of those are on him. So when you talk about lowering that sack total, a lot of it's on the offensive line. And any offensive line worth its salt is going to say it's on us. But that's not the case. And everybody around them has to get better to lower that number.
Talk to us about Clay Millen, Mike. And just, again, you're going to see so much. Yeah, he's throwing the ball around. He's working out all those things. But what about his confidence level? You know, obviously, we talk to him every day during the season here on the program. And, you know, you talk to him on a show, and he sounds confident enough. But when you're talking to him, you know, before, after games, throughout practice, throughout the course of the week, have you seen a change in him from last season and then going through the offseason program to now to spring? What kind of changes have you seen with him personally?
I haven't seen a change in his confidence because I think he's a confident kid to begin with. He's always been confident, and that's good. What I have seen is I think he's more comfortable. He's more comfortable being the guy, and that's important. It's funny. So, like, today I have to tell him, you know, hey, Clay, first day of practice, you're going to meet with the media. Couple guys on TV, pulls off his helmet, he goes, oh man, my mom is going to kill me, my hair looks terrible, she's going to say I need a haircut. So that's the kind of kid he is. He's more worried about his mom thinking he needs a haircut and really, mom, he just finished a 3-hour practice, his hair's not going to look good, but you know, he knows what he's going to get nitpicked on at home and afar, and that's, he's got a very good self-awareness of these things. He's funny. His teammates like him. He's got a voice that does resonate. You talk to his teammates. He's a kid that, you know, they know there's no question he's their guy. And they all have confidence in him. And I think that extends to his comfort level now to where he knows he has to make more stuff. He's one of the first guys to tell you the things that he has to improve. I don't think, you know, Matt Mumme has to walk into the quarterback room and go, hey, Clay, have you thought about this? Yeah, Clay's thought about it and knows what he's got to work on. And he does. He's the kind of kid that puts in the work to do it.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to see what he does, you know, with that, with everything going on here now, maybe getting that offensive line set up, build that chemistry up throughout the course of spring ball and such. Mike Brohard joining us from CSURams.com. Hey, Mike, the real reason you guys all got together and moved practice to start today, was that just because you wanted to do it on Jay Norvell's birthday? Is that what this was all about?
Yes. Yeah, you finally figured it out. Yeah. Yeah, we needed to make a set, you know, on Jay's 39th birthday.
Yeah. Wow, man, he is young.
He's very young. He looks like he can still play.
He does.
Thought that was a perfect time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a brand new year for him. It's a brand new year for CSU. So let's just kind of tie it and put a nice, pretty little bow on the package.
Yeah, it started hitting me today. My, you know, my breaking news brain started clicking. I was like, it's his birthday. That's what this has all been about. Investigative reporting, Mike.
Very good. You're on top of your game right now, Brady. It's not spring for you. It's mid-season.
No, I'm in mid-season form, man. And I don't really need to ask. I can change up this question now. We know kind of what Isaiah Stevens is going to do, kind of. But now we have a 50-50 type situation here. So, Mike, thoughts there. What's your response on Isaiah Stevens' future?
Okay, so I need a new answer now because the question is the same.
It's going to be different now. Yeah.
Actually, you know, I wish Isaiah all the best as he pursues the NBA Combine and going through all the interviews, and that he gets all the information he needs to make the choice that is best for that young man in his life.
That is very well done by you.
Thank you.
Not too different from where you were, but just enough of an adjustment based on the information that we have.
You know, look, hey, I think a lot of people would like to see him back in a CSU uniform. Because he's so much fun to watch, one. Two, he's just a great kid, no doubt about it. So having somebody around that, around here like that for another year would be awesome. But he also wants best for him, and if he's ready to go to the NBA, if he's ready to go pro, you want his workouts to go as good as they can so he can put the best of Isaiah Stevens out there and people get to see it and appreciate it and let him make that choice based on the information he's given. You know, it's a win-win for him. It's tricky, obviously, from CSU's perspective, because by the time he makes that decision, the chance of you replacing somebody, you don't replace Isaiah, but the chance of bringing in a body like him that can contribute close to him, those go down. You know, the odds go down that you're going to find somebody still in the transfer portal of that kind of case. That's what they ran into with David Roddy last year.
Yeah, sure. It makes, you know, you're happy for David. You obviously want the best for him, but at the same time, it puts you kind of in a tough spot because finding a guy to replace him's tough because nobody wants to come here and be a backup to David Roddy because they know that's exactly what they're going to be. And then by the time he makes his decision, well, maybe the better ones are gone at this point. I mean, Mike, you talk to these coaches on a regular basis, the basketball side of things, all of them really, but I just keep thinking about these guys. I mean, I'm thinking about all these coaches that we talk to and deal with in the area, the Steve Smileys, even up north, the Jeff Linders, and what Nico Medved and his crew are going through. This transfer portal is absolutely madness right now. I don't know how anybody keeps up with it. I dang sure don't know how you re-recruit, how you fill a roster. I mean, a tough job just keeps getting a little bit more complicated.
They don't sleep.
I would imagine.
They do know that. I think a pretty good idea. They don't really sleep. They don't take off weekends. The transfer portal is constantly changing. I mean, it's changing day to day. Who's in there? And, you know, especially for somebody like Nico and his staff, it's not just the most talented players that you can find, but you got to have the right fit. And I think they've done a good job of that. People that come in and match the culture of what this program is. And that's part of the process. You can't go in and just say, okay, this guy's, you know, he's an 18-8 guy. We got him. No, does he fit? I mean, is he a guy that wants to be part of the team system, or is he a guy that's a me first? You know, there are guys that you can bring in that are talented, and I think you've seen it across country. People hit the transfer portal, you get really excited about these guys and what they can do, and then it's more about them than it is about the team and the team's success, and then you've just signed something worse than what you had. So you got it takes some time. There's a reason somebody's in the portal, and you got to figure out what that reason is.
Yeah, and now it's at an all-time high. You see it on Twitter. You see guys going left and right. I just saw Isaiah Rivera moments ago. Wow. I mean, again, guys you maybe thought were going to enter the transfer portal, didn't know for sure, but guys that you root for, obviously, you want to see them here, but for whatever reason, they're moving on, finding different spots there. Mike, what are you working on that we can check out at CSURams.com?
Let's see. Today. This story on the fact, of course, you know, the CSU's defense played really well last year, but they lost both starting linebackers. So you got to fill those gaps, but then you've also got to come up with the guys that are going to reserve. So right now, you know, like you got Drew Kulik and Chase Wilson are next in line. These are guys that played a lot of snaps last year. But the most important thing is everybody knows Taquan Jackson was a 3-year captain. His voice resonated throughout that locker room, not just on defense, not just in the linebacker room, but to the team. And that's a big hole to fill. And so one of the first things really that Drew and Chase had to do was step into that leadership role, especially in the linebacker room, but then also try to develop a voice outside of that. And I think everybody's impressed so far with what those two young men are doing.
Yeah, we'll see if they can fill that up and improve that position there. Because like you, I think you and I were talking today, that's kind of the big one that they're looking at. Do they have potential, the defensive backs crew, you know, between the safeties and the cornerbacks, do you think that they have potential to be the best defensive back unit in the Mountain West Conference?
You know, that's a really good question. There are some pretty decent units in the Mountain West, but especially when you look at the safeties, Jack and Henry, and then you throw in Aiden Hector probably as the nickel or Henry as the nickel, whatever you want to do it, however you want to look at it, that's a really good start. And I think Chiggy is really kind of overlooked at what he does at corner. So, yeah, that's a really strong group that can only get better.
Yeah, I love watching those guys play. They were so much fun last season. Mike, appreciate you as always. Gloves on Thursday. Don't worry. You don't need to bring your backups. I'll have some.
Did you so now you appreciate me after you ignored me. You ghosted me for like a month.
I texted Mike yesterday. I was like, you good for tomorrow? He's like, did you fire me? I haven't heard from you in a while. And I was looking back at our text. I was like, crap, did I forget last week? My bad, man. I've been a little under
really
the weather.
Like, I was ready to come on and talk about Andrew Lyris. Congratulations to the young man, by the way.
And you're a That's diehard phenomenal. Wrestling guy.
I like wrestling. People that really know me know. Like, the state high school tournament was my favorite thing to cover for all time. I love wrestlers because it's them. You know, they never make excuses for anything that happens. They're gritty. And it was so like that night, everybody's watching basketball. I watched the NCAA wrestling finals from start to finish. And that 6-point move he threw was just beautiful. And it's great to see a local kid do what he did. And it's great to see a local kid do what he did in his hometown. I mean, Greeley's a good wrestling community. That's got to mean the world to that community that he stayed home, and he's a national champion there for his own town. And he kept talking about G-Town and representing, and all that. That stuff's awesome.
I love it. And Mike, I know you don't have a lot of time, but if you do, go back. If you do get time, check out that interview we had with Andrew last week talking about that final move, too, about that wasn't something he does. It's not in his repertoire, but he had practiced it years ago to beat his brother, to show off in front of the crowd when he was in high school and pulled it out. It sounded like something from a movie, man. It was really cool to listen to.
You know, and that's the cool thing about that sport. And like you saw, the match before his was just as good. When a 2-time champ from Penn State lost, because the kid was just so much quicker and it could scramble. And that's what you see in those good wrestlers like Andrew is. It might not be something they practice a lot, but it's something that they've always got in their bag. And he's always been a kid, and he was in high school. Such great body awareness of where he was and where he could get leverage that it was amazing to see him hit that move, because I guarantee you at least half the country thought he was in dire straits when that was starting to take place, and then he turns it for a 6-point move. And then for him to keep his composure after, God, it was the delay to read whether or not that he got the four count was probably longer than a 7-minute match itself. But man, he just came back. It was awesome.
It was really cool. Mike, appreciate you as always, my friend. And I'll probably see you on Thursday. I think that's next on the schedule, right? Thursday?
Bright and early. Thursday morning, 8 a.m. Bring your gloves. Maybe some warmer socks.
A hat, probably. Hat this time.
Hat.
Going with the hat.
Yeah, you got more hair than I do, so you could probably keep your hair.
Yeah, I'm supposed to get a haircut tomorrow, though, so that could change quickly. We'll see.
I don't know. Maybe you can talk Clay into getting a haircut, too, because his mom's pretty sure his mom's not going to be happy when she sees that on the news tonight.
Hey, when I have him in next, we'll do dual haircuts. That would be a fun segment. Two guys talking while they're getting their haircut. What do you think?
It'd be like a barbershop.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
I think it'd be awesome. Mike, appreciate you, my man. We'll see you Thursday.
Okay, only if Angel gets to do the haircut, so.
Oh, absolutely. Wouldn't have it any other way. That was already the plan. Yeah. All right, Mike. Thanks, man. Mike Brohard, CSURams.com. 12:45 the time. Love Mike. Great work from him. Let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hey, what's going on? This is Justin Adams with CBS 4 down in Denver, Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KSKA.
I mean, you know when interviews are fun when they take, you know, 20-plus minutes there. Mike Brohard joined us earlier. If you guys miss any of our interviews, check them out at thewholeshow.com or 1310kfka.com. Poll question is up. Thanks to Tight Knit Brewing Company here in downtown Greeley. Which college football spring practices are you most interested in? Is it the Buffs? Is it the Rams? The Bears? Or the Cowboys? Go vote at thewholeshow.com. 12:50 the time. News just broke moments ago. Isaiah Rivera for Colorado State has entered the transfer portal as well. They're going to be replacing a lot of starters coming up, a lot of guys on that team. It's The Whole Show powered by PDC Energy. We'll wrap up this hour. Busy, busy 1 o'clock hour coming up. You don't want to miss it. It's Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Sean Payton, Russell Wilson. Will it work out? Here are our thoughts on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, what's going on? This is Justin Adams with CBS 4 down in Denver, Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KSKA.
Well, a lot of people are asking me, how did the Rams look today? I mean, they're in shells. They got their helmets on. They got their shoulder pads on.
6 wins?
Oh, yeah. Based on what I saw today, 6 wins. Definitely.
12?
Yeah, 12. Probably undefeated. Yeah.
Mountain West title?
Yes. Based on what I saw today, undefeated. Nobody's messing with that. Dude, Clay Millen, uncontested passes. Like, just perfect. Caught everything. Guys,
in the bucket?
Yeah. I mean, 100% today. Hardly
defenders
any drop passes.
A little, eh.
Defenders? Well, they weren't actually defending them. You know, the defenders were practicing defensive drills, but with each other. Hmm. But they were defending each other really well. No footballs were being thrown. They're just working on their footing and steps and stuff. But shut down. Nobody caught a touchdown pass on them.
That's good.
Offensive line? Nobody got sacked. I mean, again, what do I look for? Speed? Accuracy of passes? Maybe. It's like, dude, it's freezing out here. You're trying to take pictures, too. I mean, yeah, they have some pieces that I'm excited about. I didn't ask Mike this because Mike works for CSU, but Avery Morrow, that's a big question mark. Obviously, his legal situation we talked to Kevin about yesterday, that was a stud last year. He was arguably their best. I mean, Torrey Horton was probably their best one, most explosive offensive player, but Avery Morrow, maybe the most consistent down the stretch. And now I don't know what the future holds for him. And I don't know what the future holds for the running back situation. Not that that's, you know, going into last season, I don't think anybody was like, oh, they're going to have a really good running back. It's not the way the offense is constructed. So, yeah, day one, neat. What did Blake Olsen think of the UNC Bears as they started spring practice? We'll talk to Blake about that, the voice of the Bears on the other side. It's The Whole Show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.